Welcome to Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is entrepreneur and visionary leader, Patrick Baltima. Patrick is chairman, CEO, and co-founder of Food Maven. Food Maven sells high-quality, local, and oversupplied food from distributors, manufacturers, and producers to restaurants and institutional buyers at about half the price. With an innovative online marketplace and rapid logistics, Food Maven brings agility and flexibility to the U.S. food system. The company's goal is to capture and reclaim food revenues from lost food, estimated at $200 billion per year. Patrick is also president of Baltima Company, a strategic advisory firm focused on working with early phase, typically VC, private equity finances, startup companies, and more. He has served as CEO, founder, and executive chairman for a variety of software and online digital companies over the years, including Cold Baby, Cybrant, Aeroprise, and Exaware. Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Super. So Food Maven, you're attempting to tackle a massive challenge and obviously a massive opportunity as well. One that I would wager that most of us unfortunately don't think about on a daily basis. So what led you to start Food Maven along with your co-founder, Dan Lewis?
Yeah. So, I think we've all heard these big kind of hand-waving numbers that, 40% of everything that farmers grow is thrown away, that hundreds of billions of dollars is lost. Meanwhile, 68% of farmers are on the verge of bankruptcy, and a third of what's going into landfills is food waste. And, that juxtaposed with 42 million Americans that are food insecure. So I, like everybody, I kind of knew those numbers. I'm a kid with an ag background and thought, I just got to dig in and understand how it happened. So almost 5 years ago, and again, in partnership with Dan and some others, we just started to dig into the food system to understand really how and where it happens, to see if there's something that we couldn't do. And that's really the roots of how Food Maven came to be.
Awesome. So you mentioned that 68% of, if you could repeat it even, 68% of farmers
are on the verge of bankruptcy, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And I kind of happen to know because I'm afraid my brother's, in that group of kind of being on the verge of bankruptcy, trying to keep it together.
Mm. So I would imagine, and we'll get a little bit deeper in your business model and everything, but, looking at kind of this big picture here, I would imagine that many people and companies, maybe have a little bit of a visceral reaction because when we hear, think of discarded or wasted food, we think of old or rotten or even just unhealthy. So as most disruptors need to do, what negative perceptions did you have to overcome, in your early stages here, and how have you overcome them?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, the reality is nobody wants to eat food waste, right? I mean, the thing that we came to kind of recognize, and I think is an important distinction, is waste is just a symptom of this fundamental problem in the system. And let me just unpack a little bit, because it really begs the question of, how in the world does that happen? And as we kind of dug in and learned, we realized there was a couple of big things that were really driving all this food that was getting lost in the system. And you hear, we tend to talk about it more in terms of lost food than food waste. Food waste is just the ultimate symptom. The first thing we kind of came to recognize is that the system lost an enormous amount of food just because we've kind of grown to have this abundance expectation. So our expectation now is that you always have everything all the time. And that expectation is really throughout the entire food system. So the unforgivable sin, if you're a farmer or a producer or a distributor, is to say to the next person in the food chain, I'm sorry, I can't fill your order. That's like unacceptable. And so when you kind of take into account this kind of 1950s character of our logistics system, and then couple it with that, you always have to have everything all the time, statistically speaking, the only way you can do that is to significantly oversupply the system. And the system oversupplies every step along the way, from the farm to the packing shed to the wholesaler, distributor, big distribution center, and ultimately all out to the grocery store. And that oversupply of the system is the single biggest place where food gets lost. It's just oversupplied, and not needed and kind of in the way, and the nature of the system is it has no place to go. The second thing we discover is kind of a bundle of things that we call imperfects. It could be seconds that, again, perfectly good food, but it just doesn't match some kind of bizarre cosmetic spec. It could be short date. So, and by the way, those dates are actually a confusing thing that really don't mean very much, nothing in terms of food safety. Or it could be short lot. So there was lots, or somebody, you know, somebody makes a brand change on a product. Now everything that's in the system is obsolete and doesn't have a place to go. So that's this kind of bucket of imperfects. And then the third area we discovered where enormous amounts of food gets lost is local food. So we all like to talk about farm to table, but the truth of the matter is there's no system for it. And so local farmers, farmers, growers that are even trying to do local, oftentimes really struggle to get access to their local markets. And so those are the three areas. And really, again, it's perfectly good food. It's not that the food has failed, it's that the system has failed. And as a result, we have all this food that gets lost. So that's what we're capturing. And that's what we're kind of making a market for, to be able to kind of recover the value and to avoid all of the negative economic as well as social impacts associated with all this food that's getting lost.
So there's this market inefficiency there that, but it's also, as you said, it's primarily caused by consumer expectations. I mean, if I go to the store for apples, I expect there to be a lot of apples. I'm thinking about particularly with produce, there's food that quote unquote over ripens. Avocados comes to mind.
Yep.
As one of them. I mean, there's, your window to sell an avocado is what? I don't know, 3 days? Unless you buy it hard and then it ripens at home. But if that avocado, if you want to buy a ripe avocado, you have 2 or 3 days to eat it, which means you only have 2 or 3 days to sell it, right?
Well, and a lot of people don't understand. I mean, part of the reason why avocados are that way is avocados and a lot of food is harvested a long ways away, severely underripened. It survives the long haul of the food system, and at the distribution center right before it goes to the grocery store, it's gassed with ripening agents. Mm-hmm. So your avocado has very little life left on it because it was artificially ripened with accelerating agents that then mean the avocado has very little shelf life. It's true of bananas, it's true of all kinds of different items. And part of this is this kind of nature of the food system. I'll give you another example. So a lot of people don't realize 71% of all lettuce comes from the area around Salinas, California. 71% of all the lettuce in the United States comes from that one place. If you add Arizona to that, 98% of all lettuce comes from those, Yuma and Salinas, California. Now add to it this weird consumer preference that we all want lettuce to be turned into a salad and put in a plastic bag. By the time you do that and get it to the East Coast, you got a couple days of shelf life on that product. So, I mean, those are things that are just kind of crazy about kind of what goes on in the food system. And so we're figuring out, sometimes we're getting product that's got, it's very rapid use in character, and that's why we're selling to restaurants and institutional kitchens. They're going to use it fast, right? But, sometimes it's just, this kind of crazy food system that we've got. And to your point on apples, the accepted wisdom in the grocery business now is if you or I walk into a store searching for apples and they're out of apples, there's a 40% chance on that one event that we will change our grocery store buying pattern. Mm. And that's this, in some sense, that's like what we got to live with now, right? It's kind of the expectation of society. But what it means is an awful lot of thrown away apples. Mm. And so that's what we're really getting at, is to understand, that oversupply of apples that's at a distributor and they don't have orders for them and they have no place to go. We're capturing that product. And then we're applying big data and kind of best of internet capabilities, including a very rapid logistics model. So for our suppliers, we're helping them avoid something that they don't want to do. Nobody likes throwing away perfectly good food, right? And you definitely don't like paying to do it. So we're creating revenue rescue for those suppliers that are getting that product to us, whether it's oversupply, imperfects, or local food. And then for our buyers, restaurants, institutional kitchens, commercial food businesses, they're getting high quality, you know, equal to or better quality of product than they were going to get otherwise, with comparable or better levels of service at a significant discount from what they would otherwise pay. And then, and again, I really think, you know, we are trying to make the food system more economically viable, because it's not working there's not a lot of people making money in the food system right now. So we're trying to restore positive economics to the system. And I think that, you know, is virtuous in and of itself. But then whatever doesn't rapidly sell in our system, we donate for hunger relief. And then we're on a zero landfill policy, because a lot of what happens with this lost food is it just gets hauled to the dump. And so we've got, you know, contracts with pet food companies and pig farms for the very small percentage that we don't make a market for. So again, it really is to say, how can we create a market-based solution? How can we apply innovation in the form of technology and logistics to be a complement to the big food system that really has this really ugly issue of so much food getting lost?
It's pretty mind-boggling as you think about it, because, you know, part of it too, you mentioned cosmetics. We have this crazy, unrealistic expectation of how our food should look. And I guess we make some sort of, emotional judgment based on that. I'm again thinking of apples, and, you know, you think about the poor apple that you know, maybe has a little blemish on it or something like that. And you've got 300 other apples in front of you, and we all do it, right? You sit there and you look for the good one, thinking for some reason that it's going to taste better because it's the skin is doesn't have a little notch or something in it.
Yeah. Just a couple of weeks ago, I was on a panel with the Colorado Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association, and there was a peach grower on the panel with me, and he just kind of nonchalantly said, and again, this is not a criticism of him, but he kind of nonchalantly said that he grew and delivered about 800,000 pounds of fresh peaches to the retail market every year, and he loads about 800,000 pounds of peaches into a dump truck and dumps it in a ravine on his land every year.
Wow.
And, you know, there was like an audible gasp in the room when he said it. And, you know, I understand why. Those were perfectly good peaches. They were probably just as tasty. They might have even tasted better, but they didn't meet some kind of crazy cosmetic spec. So, you know, they were in the category of seconds. And, you know, they were maybe a little misshapen, or maybe they were slightly bruised or whatever. And so those are the kinds of things where we're saying we have got to do better. We've got to be better stewards of food than that. And it's not the blame of the grower. It's the system failing. And so that's where, again, we consider ourselves very fortunate. We're very grateful to be able to step in as a complement at those points where the system fails.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you coined the term, but I like the term revenue rescue as well. And and there's clearly, obviously, an ethical gap here as well that you're helping to close. You've mentioned a few, but I want to make sure that we mention them all. Who are the suppliers that you're working with? And then we'll talk about who the buyers are too. So you've mentioned farmers or direct suppliers. I think I gather that supermarkets themselves are suppliers as well.
To the point of their distribution centers. So once it gets to the store, it's essentially lost to us. It goes into the category of what gets referred to as post-consumer waste. So we're not, you know, we've kind of worked with and kind of explored and experimented, and we've kind of realized it's at the big grocery distribution centers is kind of the last stop of opportunity for us. So it's growers, producers, manufacturers, some of the regional kind of local food manufacturers, the large manufacturers, and then the wholesalers, distributors to the big distribution centers. That's the span of where we focus. Of course, you hear in describing that, it also gives you some sense of the complexity of what the system is, right? I mean, the typical food, you know, from the field until it gets to the grocery store is typically going through 7 to 8 different entities before it gets to the grocery store.
Wow. And ultimately, you're a technology company, right? I mean, ultimately, I'm sitting here trying to think of all these data points and dots that you're trying to connect. And, you know, to use the, I think it's become a cliche, you're a bit of the Uber of you know, food waste, and that you're just making a connection. Real easy, right? But just making a connection instead of, you know, driver and passenger, you're making the connection between, perhaps a restaurant and a farmer, but how on earth else would they have connected without the technology? Am I right?
Yeah. And so I would say our core innovation is kind of the technology and matching algorithms, pricing algorithms, internet, marketplaces. Yes. But again, to be clear, we are doing full logistics.
Right.
We roll a semi to the distribution center. We bring it into our warehouse infrastructure. We pick the orders. We load it onto our delivery vehicles. So it's, in the case, there are some things where you can just have a pure technology. You know, it's just kind of a two-sided marketplace and it all happens on technology. And if it's like something that's purely digital, you can do that. But when you're talking about, and there are folks in this space that think that that's going to work, but when you're talking about food, you really have to do logistics or you just don't have table stakes. And so and part of the reason is there's so much regulatory stuff legitimately around food safety. So, we're doing full traceability, full, all the compliance with all the USDA kind of food safety handling kinds of requirements to the level where, we can do full traceability if we find out that a case of lettuce that we have in inventory is from a lot that was harvested from a particular field on a particular date and needs to be recalled. We can recall that no matter how many steps it's been through in the food system. So that's the kind of stuff that really is, where I agree with you. I mean, we essentially are kind of an Uber for lost food. Except that, you just got to do this logistics stuff. And I think that's part of the reason why this has been such a persistent problem is it's not an easy, this is not for the faint of heart. This is a hard problem to solve, but it's one that's big enough and valuable enough that it's worth solving.
It's one that's so big. I'm curious to you're obviously, you're an entrepreneur. I imagine you've taken some risks. You've succeeded. You've failed, I'm sure.
Yep.
Did you doubt yourself on this one? I mean, this is big. I mean, we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and they have great little ideas that can grow big, but you kind of can't do this one unless you're going for the whole thing. You're not, I have no idea what your revenue is. That's not our question here, but this is not a $4 million company that's going to try and become $5 million. Like, this is all in. Am I right on that? And how? What was kind of your thought process in the early stages of should I try to tackle something this big?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And, and again, I mean, I'm not, this is CEO gig number 7 for me. So this is not my first rodeo. And I do... I do recognize the magnitude. And to some sense, you could really argue that, we're kind of the flea on the multi-trillion dollar dog trying to change the dog. The thing I realized early is to have a chance, we really needed to be very strategic about partnerships and investors. So you probably know Walter Robb, the former co-CEO of Whole Foods, invested and joined our board of directors. And members of the Walton family similarly have invested in our are represented on our board. So, we have been very fortunate to be able to secure some very strategic relationships that have positioned us to be able to actually, make a difference. And that's where, again, I mean, I'm kind of humbled by and feel very grateful that we have had such big companies lean in and tell us. I had a meeting the other day with a senior executive, top executive at one of the largest food service catering companies. And this individual said to me, if I had a nickel for every person who walked into my office and told me they had solved the food waste problem, I'd be a very rich person. And oh, by the way, nobody has a solution and tell me why I'm not wasting my time. And, you know, a half an hour meeting turned into an hour and a half. And they're now doing a big rollout project with us because they kind of recognize, you know what, this is actually the first thing that's put together the pieces in a way that really can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing dramatic results, both in terms of kind of the positive economic contribution, the positive kind of sustainability contribution that we're making to food companies and growers and ranchers. But also, you know, we're doubling to tripling the amount of food that goes to donation because we've created an economic incentive. We've created all the information technology. We've created all the agile logistics. So, you know, it's also something where, you know, this is like a for-profit thing that's having a positive social impact, not just on kind of food security and food justice issues, but also from an environmental perspective. Mm. It's fun to take food that was otherwise going to a landfill and see pigs devour it, or to know that it's going to get turned into pet food for, you know, that somebody's going to buy in a store, and to realize that you had a little part in helping be a better steward of food.
Mm. So I'm curious what's next for Food Maven. And I think the only way to answer to that also is to get an understanding of where you are now. I think by creating a new industry, if you will, I don't think we can start with market penetration because who knows, but so, and again, we're not a financial podcast here that gets into numbers. So revenue aside, kind of where are you now? And where, what's next for you? What is your goal? Let's go with 18 months to 2 years out.
Yeah. So we're in Colorado right now. We actually have, we have supplier relationships now that, you know, I'm regularly in Bentonville and Seattle and places where you'd expect I would be. Mm-hmm. And we're regularly kind of out with the large food companies. So on the supply side, we're creating those relationships and similar kinds of things on the buy side. So some of the largest food service companies and, you know, other folks that are in the space. But right now we're running everything in Colorado, really proving out and refining the model. Later this year, we haven't announced it yet, but we'll go to our next two cities later this year. And we're focused on a metro service area. Our model really kind of like Amazon Prime now, it's going to be in metro service areas just because you need the density and the concentration of the food system for our model to really be effective. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then over the next few years, you know, over the next 18 months, we'll add, you know, some discrete number on top of that, you know, another 10 cities, let's say. And you know, we know it's this tension between wanting to go fast, but not going too fast. So, you know, we're formulating and haven't fully announced the model for how we kind of rapidly go to market, but you could kind of envision, you know, there's already excess capacity in the food system, so we probably don't want to build a bunch more capacity. There's already, you know, a lot of rolling logistics and folks that are doing food delivery. And so, you know, you could kind of imagine how we would put those dots together to be able to go faster than, you know, here in Colorado, we've kind of done it the hard way. We've built it all ourselves. But it's really out of that learning then that we understand how we kind of scale and become a national. And candidly, we've had a lot of outreach from outside of the United States as well, asking how fast we can get to markets. But I think it's, you know, it's important for us to balance kind of how fast do we go with making sure we get it right. Now, the other piece here is, you can imagine, this is not, you know, this is not going to be a trivial capital raise. So, you know, we've already raised a fairly significant amount, and we've got things kind of in place to raise, you know, even more to be able to support this model.
Awesome. Well, the dilemma, how fast you scale and how do you do it? So, yeah. Let's see, how can folks get in touch with you? You're at foodmaven.co online.
Yeah, or actually foodmaven.com now. It took us a while, but we got that URL now. So
you wrestled it away from someone, I understand.
We are very grateful to a food blogger in Brooklyn who agreed to contribute to the cause. So.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. What a cool, wild, big idea that you're tackling, and to do it on, I think you said this is your seventh go around, at least specifically as a CEO. I imagine that you're applying many, many lessons learned over the years to you know, try and leave your mark here on such a big challenge that really benefits everyone. We've spoken with the good folks over at Feeding America before. That certainly opened my eyes to the food insecurity issue in this country. And I think that, again, just, you know, it helps all of us probably reframe how we look at food. And I mean, literally look at food and consider that, you know, our role that we play in the selections that we make along the food system. So I want to thank you for joining. And I wish you tremendous amount of luck.
Thank you so much. And again, I appreciate your attention to the topic, and we're just grateful for all the folks that care.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dan. Take care. Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.